Welcome to Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You, the podcast that focuses on Christians that are active in everyday life. Join in as we speak to everyone from successful business owners to educators to athletes about their faith and how it helps them reach out and revolutionize those around them to do the same. And now get ready to roar with your host, the voice of manifestation, John Fuller.
Hey, Roar Nation, John Fuller here, fired up for today's special guest. I have followed him for many years. I'm really excited about this. When we start talking, you will probably recognize him or some of his work. So that being said, my friend, my new friend, Danny Silk, you ready to roar?
I'm ready, buddy. You ready?
I am ready to do this. So Roar Nation, check this out. Danny is the president of Loving on Purpose. He is part of the Bethel advisory team, and he is also the senior advisor of Jesus Culture. So I just recommend, if you don't recognize any of those three terms, then you can Google one of them and you'll have plenty of information to keep you busy for quite a while. So that being said, Danny, that is just a little bit about you, and that doesn't even scratch the surface. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about you, who you are, and what you do, my friend?
Well, John, I've been part of the Bethel crew since I got saved back in 1983. You know, we went to church together. Actually, Bill and Chris prayed with me at the altar that day I got saved.
Wow.
I met Chris Fallaton when I was 16 years old. We worked together in a tire store. He was a mechanic out back, and I was changing tires up front. Took 5 years for me to get saved after that, but nonetheless, so we've been friends for 40 plus years. Sherry and I pastored the church where Bill Johnson pastored when he went to Bethel. We took over in Weaverville, and we did that for 6 years. Then we went to Bethel and did all that. We were there for 14 years. 5 years ago, we came down to Sacramento with Banning Leapshire and the Jesus Culture crew to plant a church that grew from, you know, he started with about 60 people from Reading to, I think he's got about 4,000 people going in. Nearly, well, less than 5 years later. So that's exciting. I write books. I wrote Loving Your Kids on Purpose, Culture of Honor, Keep Your Love On, Powerful and Free. Just co-authored a couple of books. Bob Hassan and I wrote a book, Business of Honor, and Carla Chud and I wrote a book called Pathway to Powerful that just came out Christmas. Travel around. I now have Danny Silk Consulting, where I do a lot of work with businesses and executives, mainly executive coaching and working with teams. And I still travel around doing conferences and that sort of stuff.
Keep you busy. You sound very busy.
I like to be busy, actually.
It sounds like it. So I want to go back. That's funny. I didn't realize you guys go that far back. Hold on. As far into Weaverville, I thought, that's funny, cause I've heard Chris tell many stories about it. That guy's hilarious telling about his stories, back then. But what did you do before you got into ministry? I kind of want to talk about your journey as far as, I heard tire shop, and you did that with Chris, growing up, but what got you in, what were you doing previous before ministry? Kind of tell us about your journey.
Well, you know, I was 16 doing the tire store stuff. And then when I was 18, I became a meat cutter in a grocery store. So I did that for about 6 years. And then Sherry and I moved to Reading, actually. And I started going to school. We were doing in-home residential treatment with adolescents. And so basically group home work. And I was getting my social work degree. We did that for almost 9 years, well, a little over 9 years. I got my master's degree in social work, and I did foster care social work and worked with a lot of, a lot of families in crisis. And then we went from there to pastoring in Weaverville, took over for Bill.
Wow. So I kind of want to talk about the journey. Now you mostly do, obviously, ministry, but what was the process of the transition going from working into pastoring and kind of how you made that transition?
Well, I was being groomed to take over the organization that I was working with while I was going to school. And I really thought that's what I was going to do. I thought I was going to be the executive director of a large nonprofit that did a lot of foster care, adoptive care, counseling, group homes. So 9 years in, I'm on that track, and we get a call from Bill Johnson to come be his associate pastor back in Weaverville, which I said I'd never do. And there you have it. So, you know, Billy Graham or James Dobson or somebody could have called me and asked me to come work with them, and I would have passed it up because I was totally happy where I was. There's like one person on the planet that could get me to give up 9 years of investment in school and career and to go back to Weaverville. And it's Bill Johnson. So we packed up and went back, and we were there for 2 months, and Bill said, I'm going to Bethel now. So
that sounds like a setup.
Yeah. I totally thought Yoda was going to teach me about the Force, and nope, here I go. I am now senior pastor of a little church in the town where I got saved and the town where I grew up as a heathen. So we are, you know, feel like, you know, we're going to ruin the church we got saved in because these people have had Bill Johnson for 17 years.
Yeah.
And now they're about to get Danny Silk, who's never pastored anything.
Well, Danny, you can't leave me hanging on that. You got to talk about, well, two questions. One, I want to hear some of that in the process, but I'm really curious. You said, you know, Billy Graham or James Dobson, somebody could have called you, but you went for Bill. And I'm curious why, because I mean, that says a lot about him or your guys' relationship, but why?
Yeah, it's because Bill's my father, you know. He's the guy that really taught me the most about who my father is, you know, and he's without a doubt he's the highest quality human I've ever met. So I've moved my family twice because he asked me to. We had taken over the church, you know, so there was our first move. And then we were there for 6 years. We were building a church. That Mountain Chapel, the church we took over, had been basically homeless, meaning that they met in a theater for 18 years. And we had built a building. We were 3 months away from occupying the building when Bill asked us to go to Bethel. So I tossed the keys to the new guy. And 3 months later, he had a brand new building that I never preached in.
Nice. You got to be Moses.
Yeah. So, Bill's right up there with the influential people in my life.
I like that. So let's talk about kind of making the transition. I guess you never thought about or were planning on getting into ministry. I like to talk about purpose on my show. It's kind of when you had like that aha moment or you felt like, hey, this is what I'm supposed to do. And you can recognize maybe stepping stones or all your schooling, the stuff that you had going into that. Did you kind of have that moment where you just realized like, hey, this is what I'm supposed to do and just kept on pursuing that path?
Yeah, I think that when I got saved, I was 21 years old. And I was helping Chris with the youth group. And I remember one time he prophesied over me that I would one day be a pastor in Weaverville. And so I was like, okay, well, how do I do that? You know, how do I be a pastor? What do I got to go to school? I mean, do I, you know, what, got to know somebody? How do you do this? And, so I found out how much school costs, and there's no way that was going to happen. And then within a couple years, I was in Reading going to school. I went to three public schools. I didn't go to any private schools. And I thought I was just going to be a therapist. I thought, well, I'm not a pastor, so maybe I'll just be a Christian counselor and a social worker. That's pastoring in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I did 9 years of that kind of work, and I started teaching parenting in local schools. So I would be in a room. This is my public speaking training.
Okay.
I am in a room teaching parents, and I am scared to death, but they're laughing at me. I'm like, oh, okay, well, if I can make them laugh, then I can make them like me.
Yeah.
If I can make them like me, I can get through this. And so I was, I had a, 100 parents in a gymnasium laughing at me acting out their kids and acting out them. And so I did that for about a year, and we got the call. And we got the call. This is my pastoral training right here, is 9 years of social work school and experience and a year of parent training about 5 times.
Nice. You're well equipped then.
Yeah, I felt overqualified and over equipped for the task to follow Bill Johnson.
So I'm just curious, like, we laugh overqualified. Obviously, you had very little experience, but I mean, to say that, I don't think you could have really had, I don't know how you qualify for that. I mean, sometimes I think you almost jump 2 feet in and you just do it and you kind of figure, I mean, could you had training, or was it the best way? You just jumped in and you had somebody, obviously you could call Bill and say, hey, what do I do about this situation? Or you need some advice, but you just kind of jump in and just do it.
Yeah, you just jump in and do it. I think that's the, that's Peter getting out of the boat. You know, that's Moses raising his rod. You know, it's just whatever. You just do it, and Lord shows up. And but I'll tell you, I had diarrhea for 2 years. You know, so it was, I ain't going to say it was pretty, but I did it.
Oh, that's hilarious, man. So I kind of want to jump into your digging deep. Hold on. Before we get into digging deep, I want to hear about writing. I'm fascinated. We talked before the show, I'm working on a book. I have a really hard time writing personally, so I get help. I love to talk, but it's hard for me to write. What was that process for you? You've written some phenomenal books. It just started coming out of you because you'd been teaching it for years. You love to write. I mean, I'm curious how that started for you.
Well, going to school, they teach you how to write,
a lot, right?
Yeah. You have all this stuff you got to do and get it right. And they judge you on every little thing. And so, I mean, there's that. But I wrote Culture of Honor and Loving Your Kids on Purpose. And then I worked with an editor just to make it, buttery smooth. But the Powerful and Free and Keep Your Love On, I translated those books or transcribed those books and then had an editor put them together with a flow. But it was just all my stuff from all the years of teaching relationship stuff. And I mean, I had, 20 messages about relationships, and they just all stacked up in that book. And then I just combed through, but I was traveling by then, and I didn't have the time to just sit and pound away like I did at those other books. Cause I used to have just hours of time where I could, my kids were old enough to go do what they're going to do. And I was managing people at a big church. So it was, I had command of my time. And it was a different experience. Once I started traveling and all my time pretty much got sucked up into that craziness, I wrote two books at the same time. So Keep Your Love On and Powerful and Free were like twins. Keep Your Love On sucked all the nutrients out. So Powerful and Free barely lived, but Keep Your Love On is the biggest seller that I got, and it's really. So Allison Armerdine is my editor, and she's in my office with me here now. We're writing Unpunishable right now together. It's the same kind of process. She's just taking my messages, and then we just sit around and we talk, and she records our conversations, and then she goes away and comes back and goes, "Is this what you said?" I said, "Yep, that's beautiful. That's exactly what I was trying to say."
I love that. That's how I wrote my first book with a friend of mine. He helped me remodel your life because I contract like your friend Bob for a living. We build and remodel homes. And I was talking to him one day. I said, "Man, I just don't know how to write all this stuff, but you know, I understand construction. I've done it for most of my life." And I said, "But to me, salvation and how the Lord renews us and rebuilds us, and I'm a new, the old is gone, the new has come." I said, "It reminds me of construction." And he goes, "Well, you just need to write a book on a format like that." And he goes, "If you'll just tell me everything you want to say, I'll help you put it just exactly like what you just described." And yeah, we would have an hour-long phone conversation, and then we would talk about it. And then he'd say, "Is this how you want it to say?" And I'm like, "That is perfect. Couldn't have said it better myself."
Yeah. So yeah, that's gold. To find those people, that's gold.
Yes, absolutely. I'm curious. I want to talk about a little bit about Keep Your Love On. Danny, what is that? What inspired that? What is that about?
Oh, if you had 20 counseling sessions with Danny Silk, it would sound just like Keep Your Love On. So I just wrote it down. It's the same, you know, every time you get somebody in your office, they ask you something that the answer isn't Keep Your Love On. So I just decided, you know what? I'm going to just write it down. Because, you know, you go through a 8-hour counseling day, and the next person comes in and they start telling you their problem. You go, "Oh, you should have been in here last session. We could have done a group session, because I'm going to tell you exactly what I just told them."
Yeah.
You know, and that just happens all day, every day. So you can write a book like Keep Your Love On, and hundreds of thousands of people say, "I feel like you're talking to just me." I'm like, "Yeah, I know. It's because we are all experiencing very similar issues."
Okay, so give me a couple of examples, since we just all got categorized and we're all having a group therapy session now, me, you, and all of our listeners. So I'm just curious, like, hit a couple topics that are like central theme for people that they deal with.
I tell you, 100% of the people that come into my office, they want to tell me what the problem, you know, they want to basically, you know, have one of their worst fights in front of a counselor, you know. I'm like, whoa, hey, we're not doing that. I need to know what the goal of your marriage is. And they have no idea what I just said. Like, the goal of my marriage, like, I don't know. Like, well, just raise our kids so they don't go to prison. Save enough money so we're not miserable old people. And have a ministry for Jesus. You're like, okay, no, those are the goals for your parenting, your finances, and your ministry. But what is the goal of your marriage? And they still don't really understand the question. So we talk a little more, and eventually I say, your goal is distance. You have a goal of distance to protect yourself from each other. And so everything that you do, everything that the other person says, you spend it around to create your distance, because that's your goal, which means the other person can't do anything right. No matter what they say, you're going to spin it around so that you can keep your distance, so that you're not the problem, they are. So I'd like to know if you'd like to keep that goal or change it. Because if you want to keep that goal, then this will be our last session together. Because you don't need my help. You're doing a fantastic job getting the distance that you need. But if you would like to change that goal to connection, you're going to need my help. So you tell me what you want to do. That way, I'm not working harder on their marriage than they am. They are, and I never will. And so when they finally say, I want to be connected. Yeah, I want to be connected too. Da, 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 da. There we go. Okay, well, that's all I need. That's step one. 100% of the time, step one.
Okay.
Got to have the goal of connection, or this isn't going anywhere. And then there's always a question, well, what if one of them does and the other one doesn't? Okay, there's a million what ifs, but let's just say Then I go to, okay, how do you get the love flowing? If you really want to chase the fear away here, how do you send a message that you love this person? So then we go into Gary Chapman's five love language thing, and it's easy cheesy. Here's your five. Get out of here. Go practice your connection. So everybody starts there. Everybody starts with the goal of their relationship and owning it. And until you do, you're really not going to make much progress.
That's great advice. I mean, I'm really digging the couple of things that you said. So I'm just curious. So if somebody's listening, because we get emails all the time on stuff, I'm sure you get hundreds of them, of life questions and different things. But if you were to say somebody to right now, like, these should be some very basic goals in your marriage, or some things that you should strive for, just two or three or one, I don't care. But what would you tell people in that area that, like, these should be some basic things that you should strive for in your marriage?
Well, be a powerful person. You know, I mean, you get to be a powerful person. This is all Kylo stuff as well, but you can't control somebody else. But if you can't control yourself, then you're out of control. And when you're out of control, you're absolutely no good to anybody, because you're looking for somebody to blame. You're not looking for somebody to love. You're looking for somebody to blame. And you think somebody else is going to make you happy, make you comfortable, make you successful, make you something, instead of realizing that, you know, it's your job to manage you. It's not somebody else's job. Jesus sent the comforter. He didn't send the controller. Yeah. And so, you know, it's really, really key that we learn to be powerful people. And then the other one is really, and I use that power to choose my spouse. I choose you. That story I was telling earlier about, you know, Sherry and I tangling up pretty hard, and, you know, anxiety's through the roof. We're in dire straits. And all of a sudden I realized, wait a second, I don't control her. I control me. On a good day, let's make this a good day. Shall we, Danny? Yeah, let's make this a good day. Sherry, I choose you. My goal with you is connection. I don't know what we're going to do about this disconnect we got, or this disagreement we got, but I just want you to know I choose you. And my goal with you is connection. And as soon as I heard myself say those words, whew, all this anxiety just drained out of me. I didn't have to try to control her. I didn't have to do her side of our love. I just had to do my side. And as soon as I got it going, I'm a different guy.
Great advice. Okay. So I want to ask you, we always do this digging deep question, and the digging deep is, it's kind of like where you had that moment that I call, it couldn't be worse than this. Kind of like the Moses deal, where you show up to the Red Sea and you're just like, you know, this is terrible. And God just shows up into a circumstance and just blows your world open in a good way. Do you have a story? It could be ministry, relationships, anything, a time where you can think of, like, this is a bad spot, God, I need you to show up, and then the miraculous happens.
Are we talking about in my relationship?
You can do anything you want. We can do relationships, ministry, church experience, years, life. I mean, this show's yours, buddy. You get to pick.
Well, you know, I think, you know, Sherry and I had 12 hard years together before we started to figure things out. And so I had a thousand of those prayers. You know, like, God, if you don't show up, this is all going to turn out like my parents' relationship. You know, we tell the story and keep your love on, but between Sherry and I, you know, my two parents, her two parents and her stepfather that raised her, there are 15 marriages there. Wow. Every one of our parents have been married three times. We are going down the same road. You know, when we got our Taylor Johnson compatibility results back from our premarital, which we didn't get for 12 years. Bill, for whatever reason, didn't give them to us. I think now I know. There's a post-it note that the psychologist wrote on the results and said, Bill, do whatever you can to stop this marriage. Which means we are clinically incompatible, right? And yeah. So it's set up. We are set up to fail generationally, situationally, personality-wise. Everything is working against us. And in June, we celebrate our 35th wedding anniversary.
Thank you, Jesus.
So we turned it, you know, but I think I prayed that prayer, I don't know, 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And now here I am sitting on the mountain of marital influence with a flag stuck in the top of the mountain going more than overcomers, you know? So I think that's probably, I had an intern one time when I was in Weaverville, he came over from Bethel School of Ministry and he wanted to do an interview with me. And he said, you know, one of his questions was, what do you feel like your greatest ministry accomplishment is? And I said, oh, my marriage is my greatest ministry accomplishment ever. And it's true to this day that, you know, that Sherry and I love each other. We work together. We live with my daughter and her husband and their family. We work together with them. He just started here. He just graduated with his degree in social work. And so they're on staff with us here at Loving on Purpose. We're living the dream. You know, I think the greatest breakthrough, it keeps happening, but it feels like it's happened for 35 years.
That's phenomenal. You know what I'm thinking about? I don't know why I keep saying Moses, but it made me think about like that when God asked him to go speak and he's like, I can't, like, I'm not even qualified. And all through the Bible. And I think it's interesting how the Lord uses us in circumstances like that. I'm laughing at just listening to your story because that sounds a lot like my wife and I, we joke and we're polar opposites. We organize differently. I'm kind of messy. She's OCD. Literally everything's perfect. I say exactly what's on my mind. I've gotten better, but she's very reserved. I mean, just everything. And we've had to learn. It took us a solid 12 to 15 years. We just celebrated our 20th. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And the same thing. It's funny. I laugh at it, but it took us a lot of years to learn how to love each other and to work through stuff because we're not compatible. Yeah. It's a choice.
It is a choice. And I think that's the whole thing about, you know, I choose you. I'm a powerful person, which means that my marriage doesn't happen to me. I happen to it. You know, it cracks me up when people say, well, we fell in love, like love's a hole that you fall in. You're like, oh, well, it's even more of a miracle when you fall out of love. When you fall out of the hole, like what? How do you fall out of a hole? So love isn't this, you know, this exterior force that just takes me over. It's very much, I choose you a million times.
It's funny, I was thinking when you said that, so we fall in the hole of love, but we choose to climb out of it.
Yeah, or well, we just drifted apart. We just went our separate way. Oh, you turned your love off and you made distance your goal. Come on, own something here, would you?
Yeah, just own it. I just read a book on that a while back talking about just owning. I think he basically just said own your crap. That wasn't the word he used, but he just basically said you need to own it.
Yeah, extreme ownership.
Yes, that's it. I was trying to think of it when you said, I was like, I know, yeah. It was a phenomenal book. Ex-Navy SEAL, I believe, and trainer. Yeah. Said own it. So, okay, Danny, what do you feel like your biggest strength is in what you do?
I think I help people understand the complexities of relationships by making it simple.
Good answer. Sounds like a one-liner, dude. If we were in an elevator, I'd be like, dude, you're hired. I need you. That's the elevator pitch. Okay. So what do you feel like your biggest weakness is? Is it an overextension of your strength or something completely different?
I think currently my, I think it's my physical, physical health. I have a lot of back issues and problems with my foot and different things. So it limits me more than I have ever been limited. I think that's probably my biggest, yeah, that's my biggest, my biggest hang up right now is just my physical health stuff. If you're asking about my character properties or my personality, I think I'm a big starter and don't love to finish stuff. Love to start it, you know. Get me going with the creative stuff. Get me going with the ideas. Get me, let's go change the world. But I'm not a manager.
I'm just curious, dude. Is your wife a manager? Is she good at keeping stuff together?
My wife is my operations director.
That's exactly how my wife and I, man, I love ideas, love to start stuff. We can, you and I could talk business all day long. I just need somebody, I want to start it and I need somebody else to run it. Cause if I have to run it, it's going to get screwed up.
Yeah. It's just no fun. I love to have fun. I want to go, you know, I want to go where the energy is, and there is no energy in the details. Well, not for me anyway.
Talking about fun, side note, I hear you like fast cars, according to last week's guest, Bob.
Yeah. I have a couple of race cars, and my daily driver is a Z06. And I do like horsepower.
You like horsepower? You got any speeding tickets lately?
No. I'm not a speeding ticket junkie, but I'm definitely we have a couple courses nearby, and for sure.
Oh, that's fun.
Sonoma Speedway is about an hour and a half away, and Thunder Hill is about an hour and a half away. So, I just got sick this last week, so I missed a race out in Sonoma, Sears Point. So my team was out there racing our car. Car did good. Just had to put a motor in it from the last race in December. So it's a ton of fun. I describe racing as the most fun you can have with your clothes on.
That's a good one. All right. I like that. I'm going to have to steal that line.
Yeah, there you go.
Most fun you can have with your clothes on. Man, I'm just curious. What got you into race? How long have you been involved in that?
I've been driving too fast my whole life. But actually, just doing it on a track is probably only about 5 years old. I've wanted to start some activities for men. You know, I do a lot of hunting in Alaska with some friends. And so the first thing I ever shot in my life was a 2000 pound moose, you know.
Wow.
And I've been up in the Arctic Circle, shot a caribou. And I have these guys that, you know, just live these crazy lives of adventure, wilderness, that sort of thing. I grew up backpacking and camping and that sort of stuff. But I was never a hunter because I don't like venison.
Yeah.
And so that's all we had around where I was from, you know, black-tailed deer, which was eating acorns. They taste like muddy acorns, like, whoa. So, but I do love adventure. And I think that, you know, men are really created to touch that in their lives, to bring them back to life. And so racing, shooting, getting outdoors, all that stuff. I love all that stuff. So I'm marching towards really helping guys activate around that sort of thing. And racing was really, the beginnings of that very thing.
That's fun. Just curious, how fast have you gotten to go so far?
Well, 165 is the fastest I've ever gone in a car.
Nice.
Yeah.
Stick your head out the window, catch some air like a puppy.
Nah, didn't even think of it.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
So we talk about ministry. I like the fact that you're doing stuff outside. I'm assuming you're doing the backpacking, cars, different like that is almost outside source to bring people, men, into fellowship, into ministry. Is that what you use that for? And how are you seeing that effective?
Yeah. Well, it changes men's lives. You know, the facing fear, I guess if you didn't grow up around that stuff, there's a lot, people are afraid of guns. People are afraid of G-forces in cars. People are afraid of gunpowder, fire, wild animals going to come and get you in your sleeping bag in the middle of the night. There's just like, wow, there's so much fun in this. There's so many just great adventures. And when a guy faces his fear, you can just see him walk taller, he kind of throws his shoulders back a little bit. He's got a little hop in his walk. Like, what's going on with you? And like, just slaying some dragons.
How fun. Well, next time you guys do a camping trip, I might have to come hang out. I grew up, my dad, he's the guy that threw a couple canoes on the back of the truck. We'd hit the mountains. And sometimes, last time I remember deer hunt with my dad, we lived up in the south side of the Grand Canyon in the Kaibab deer hunt. We were up there for 3 weeks, camping out, hanging out. So yeah, my dad was that guy that, didn't matter where, man, we were just going to pinch a tent and sleep and do something in the middle of nowhere. And the further back and the less people and the more adventure he was in.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to go where everybody else is going. I want to go where nobody's going.
Come on. Okay. So Danny, a question I never skip now that I like to ask people is if you could go back to a younger you, what age would you pick and what advice would you give yourself?
I'd give myself some advice somewhere around, in my early 20s, I'd say, don't wait until you're 43 to learn to snowboard. Because you're going to hurt your back and you're going to have all kinds of trouble after that, man. So, that's probably not what you're after. I don't know. I've always been a hopeful guy. I've had a hope. So I want to say, I tell myself that everything's going to work out. And I know maybe I needed to hear that at some point, but I think I've always had a sense it's all going to work out. It's all going to be good. So I don't know. I'm trying to find a spot in my life back to where I needed some advice that would totally change my, I guess I would say, hey, you need to learn about money. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
But dude, you need to learn about money and how it works. So I'd go back as soon as that would have stuck and I'd say, hey, learn about money.
Okay. So give us some advice. Give us a younger guy's advice. You're going back. What are you going to tell us about money? What are we supposed to do?
Put money to work for you. Quit shaping your life to work for money. And I think I was in my 40s when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I thought, oh my gosh, why didn't somebody tell me this? Yeah. I think if I could back up the tape, I would have, a 16-year-old self say, hey, go put money to work for you. Quit arranging your entire life to work for money.
That's great advice. That's funny you said Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I don't know anybody who is in the entrepreneurial, anything to do with business, who has not at some point read that book. I mean, Robert Kiyosaki has had to touch tens of millions of people's lives, man.
Totally.
So
yeah, that just that little story about that Hawaiian dad, like, wow.
And his Velcro. The whole book, I just remember him talking about, and I buy and flip house. That's what I do for a living, but we do real estate. And that kind of was one of the books that got me started. But I remember him talking about, if you remember the beginning of his book, he had a Velcro business. He invented the Velcro wallet. You remember those when we were kids?
Yeah, the surfer wallet.
Yeah. And he that was his little baby. And he ended up losing that deal.
I remember he said, hey, I got this property. I'm only losing $100 a month. And his rich dad told him, Well, how many of those can you afford?
Just one at this rate.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let me do the math. Yeah. Like, oh, wow. There's just people who understand money just think different and talk different and live different. Yeah. And it's master and slave.
Yes, it is.
It's prince and pauper. It's, you know, son and orphan. So yeah, I'd give myself some money advice when I were younger.
Well, good advice. We'll take it. We'll make a side note for that one, Danny.
Yeah.
Okay. So last bit of advice you gave yourself, and it can't be money this time. So you got to give advice to the audience. It's your last piece of forever parting advice. And what would you tell our audience? And we could even go on relationships because you are the relationship guru.
Okay. Learn to be a powerful person and then live like your life was going to turn out more powerful than Jesus's life. And I think if that goal, that feels like a goal that'll keep me busy the rest of my life. And, but it's being a powerful person. I'm not a slave. I am a free lover. And so that changes the dynamic of ownership. It changes the dynamic of life flowing from me because of his life in me. So I think that people just have to learn that. They have to learn that they are powerful. And there's so much crap in religion that tries to talk people into being victims. You know, like you're just basically a victim of life and you just hope that Jesus rescues you.
See, that drives me nuts.
You know,
like my salvation is when I die and go to heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. And, your reward is when you get off this planet. Like, okay, well, that's pretty self-centered. So, how about you try to reward as many people as you cross paths with your reward, which is your freedom and your power and your love.
Come on. That's good. I like that. You got me excited on that one. So, okay. Well, Danny, man, I just want to thank you for coming on. And as we wrap up this show, you have many books. We can Google you as I did and look you up. But why don't you tell our listeners where to find your books? And also, if we have some pastors, which we do have a lot of pastors listen to us, have you come maybe speak or do a conference or something like that? How do we get a hold of you?
Lovingonpurpose.com will get you to the Life Academy. We'll get you to all the free stuff. We'll get you to the resources, the family coaching. It will get you to all that stuff. The Danny Silk Consulting is DannySilk.com. And that is basically, I'm really looking for mid to large organizations, companies, churches that really want to pursue a culture of honor. Because I love to help leaders create a connected environment.
Come on. That's good stuff. All right. Well, we just want to honor you and tell you thank you so much for taking the time to come on our show and share it. So, Danny, if you would hold on for just a second. And as we wrap it up, Roar Nation, thank you guys so much. I hope you guys jump on. I love the work that Danny's doing. It's powerful as far as relationships. I think all of us could use some help all the time, whether it's marriage, friends, or family, and learning how to honor each other, and most importantly, how to love each other. Because it's definitely a choice. It doesn't just happen. So anyways, check that out. Get on there. Order something. We love y'all. And remember, be real, be authentic, and be you. God bless.
That's all for this episode of Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You. Be sure to go to areyoureal.org for your free questionnaire to identify your gifts and talents and how you can use them to help people become leaders and catapult them into their destiny to help others become the leaders of tomorrow. We appreciate you spending your time with us and look forward to helping you reach out and revolutionize next time on Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You.